Ms. Richardson, I understand you are taking 12 minutes, and Mr. Weiner, you're taking 3.
Yes, Your Honor.
Right, and Mr. Wilson, you get to start. You'll have 15 minutes with 5 minutes for rebuttal. And would you please call the case?
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Riley, Judge Smith, Judge Flory, the Honorable Denise D. Riley presiding. Our second case this morning is A19-1345, Larry E. Reed versus the Highlands of Edinburgh, 6th Association and ACI Properties, LLC.
Judge Riley, there you
go. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, we'll take nods of heads and as indications that you can hear. So when you start your argument, we are recording. Would you please state your name for the record? Mr. Wilson.
Good morning. May it please the court, Deandris Wilson, appearing on behalf of the appellant and cross-respondent Larry Reed. This court should declare the foreclosure void and, in the alternative, reverse the district court because it erred by granting summary judgment to respondent and erred in ordering the appellant to pay additional costs to ACI to redeem his home. The foreclosure of appellant's property is void because the association failed to strictly comply with Minnesota foreclosure statutes, specifically 580.02 and 580.04. The standard of review for this court is de novo. Both Minnesota Statute 515A and 515B provide for 3-year statutes of limitations and are applicable to this association. There was evidence in the record that the association was subject to these statutes. That evidence consisted of representations by the association to the members that 515A applies, representation in the bylaws with references to the common areas, and assessments were being made for maintenance of common areas and property.
So if that's the case, this is Judge Flory, Mr. Wilson. If that's the case and it's your position that those statutes apply then, and that the last assessment payment was due in 2018, assuming a 3-year statute of limitations, it seems like this complies with the statute.
I would, and
I assume you disagree with that. And so explain to me where my reasoning is wrong.
Sure. Well, portions of it would apply if that's the reasoning that they were due. The district court indicated and ruled that 515A and 515B did not apply. So in the alternative, we're indicating that that 3-year statute of limitations should be applicable, and it would bar some of the claims that the association were seeking. If these 3-year statute of limitations do not apply to the association, then 541.05 applies, as this is a contract, and the claims would be subject to the 6-year statute of limitation. So therefore, summary judgment was not appropriate on counts 1 and 2, as there were genuine issues of material facts.
So this is Judge Flory again. How does 541.05 apply to a foreclosure by advertisement, which is a non-court action? So I'm wondering how that statute of limitations is even applicable.
My reading of 541.05 would indicate that this is a contract claim. If there's some declarations and if 515A and 515B doesn't apply, then it would be a contract claim and the 6-year statute of limitations apply per 541.05 subdivision 1. Furthermore, it logically follows that if 515A or 515B does not apply to the association as the court determined, then the assessments and liens are unauthorized because the declarations would not be authorized. Minnesota requires strict compliance with its foreclosure statutes. Here, there was no strict compliance, so the foreclosure should be void. The foreclosure was void because the lien notice requirements were not strictly complied with. The notice requirement states, each notice shall specify the amount claimed to be due on the mortgage on the date of the notice. The notice in this case was filed in May of 2018 and was for $6,634. There's two amounts that were included on that lien notice of note. One is the attorney fees of $3,326, of which $2,500 was from 2010, and then interest of $1,411. With respect to the attorney fees, Minnesota Statute 582.01 limits attorney fees in foreclosures by advertisement, and it states that the attorney fees shall not exceed the following amounts, and any provision for fees in excess shall be void to the extent of the excess. The lien at issue here was for assessments of $1,800. So the attorney fees authorized by 582.01 would have been $150, not $3,326 as claimed on the initial lien notice. Additionally,
so how do we address your argument if 515B applies? There's a provision under 0.3-116 that does not limit the amount of attorney's fees, and that 582.01 or 580.01, I guess it's 582.01, would not apply under those circumstances. The argument seems inconsistent.
Well, our argument initially was that 515A and 515B was applicable. The district court held is not applicable. Pursuant to that logic, then if 515A and 515B are not applicable, then 552.01 would limit the amount of attorney fees.
But our review is de novo, so what does it matter what the district court found?
That's correct, Your Honor. If the court makes the determination that 515A applies, then there's still a limitation to 582. 515B would apply if it was after, I believe, 1996. This association was formed in 1986, and if it would apply to some condominiums. So I guess the court would have to make a determination if 515A or 515B, but they would both have a 3-year statute of limitations. And if it's 515A, it would be subject to the limitations in 582.01. Additionally, the $2,500 that was claimed for attorney fees from 8 years prior was 2010 amounts. Both of those amounts alone exceed the attorney fees that are allowed by statute. Additionally, after the association provided notice to the appellant of the $3,326 in attorney fees, the attorney then increased the attorney fees by $2,670. And the attorney stated that that was from work that was occurred around April the 12th of 2018, which was 1 month before they issued the lien notice to the appellant, which was May 10th of 2018. However, that $2,670 was not included in the lien notice. Instead, the notice contained the attorney fees of $3,326. So that additional $2,670 that the association was demanding from the appellant also exceeds the amount that was allowed by 582.01. The $2,600 increase of the lien amount after the appellant attempted to pay the $6,600 also violated 580.04 because that increase was not the amount due on the date of the notice. And it also violates 580.30 because it was not the amount actually due existing at the time of the commencement of the proceedings. The appellant had the right to pay the amount in the lien notice, $6,634, and was prevented from doing so when the attorney added an additional $2,670. So the amount of attorney fees were not accurate and therefore not in strict compliance with the statute. Similarly, with the interest that was noted in the statute, it also contained an incorrect amount of interest, $1,411. And that's evidence in the record when the attorney recalculated the interest and changed the amount of interest. So because the interest amount in the lien notice was not accurate as the amount due on the date of the notice, the statute was not strictly complied with and the foreclosure should be declared void. With respect to count number 6, the court also erred by granting summary judgment for the improper assessments from 1999 to 2018. Again, if 515A or 515B do not apply, there is no authority for the assessments because the declarations would not be lawful. Additionally, there was evidence in the record that the association had no board in 2003, 2006, 2007, 2008. 2004 and 11, there was only one board member. In 2010, there were only two board members. Those are not sufficient forums to assess, make any lawful assessments by the board because there wasn't a board or a quorum to vote for the increases per the declaration. These facts were largely undisputed by the respondent and preclude summary judgment as the lien notice contained claims for assessments and increases when there was no board or a quorum. Thus, summary judgment was error and the foreclosure should be declared void. With respect to the additional amounts for the redemption, those amounts were improper as well. The district court held or ruled or ordered that the appellant pay $11,818 plus a $1,000 bond to the sheriff to preserve his redemption rights. However, it erred by allowing ACI to add an additional $10,743 in cost and fees to the amount to redeem. This amount was comprised of $5,620, which ACI described as taxes and assessments, and $4,500 for additional attorney fees after the foreclosure sale. These are not assessments under the declarations. The $5,620 is not allowable pursuant to 582.03, which states that the holder may pay and claim on redemption taxes and assessments. Mr. Reed paid the taxes and the assessment was paid as well. The $5,620 happens to be the difference between the amount bid at the foreclosure sale, which was $11,379, and the $17,000 paid to the sheriff, paid for the sheriff's certificate purchased from the association. So the difference in what they paid and what was bid is the difference that they're now claiming is costs or taxes and assessments. So although they labeled it as taxes and assessments, it is really a return on the profit that it paid to the association. These amounts, as indicated, were for negotiating the sale of the sheriff's certificate, communicating with the investor, calculating the amount for sale of sheriff's certificate, meeting with the association to review the terms of the offer and discuss options, revise the purchase agreement. These were not taxes and assessments and should not have been allowed to be added. Similarly, with the attorney fees, the district court also erred by allowing the association to add attorney fees of $4,500 for redemption based on the association's declarations. If this court decides that the declarations are valid and applicable, they do not contain any provision to allow that amount for additional attorney fees to be added to the cost of redemption. The $4,500 also exceeds the attorney fees under 582.01 and 582.03, which state that the holder may pay and claim again reasonable attorney fees after the sale not to exceed one half of the amount authorized by 582.01. So contrary to the misleading quote on page 5 of ACI's brief, the declarations provide that the foreclosure shall be conducted by either an advertisement or action, and the attorney fees referenced in 4.9 of the declarations pertain only to attorney fees where there has been an action by foreclosure, which classifies as a prevailing party versus a foreclosure by advertisement. So if 515A or B are not applicable, there is no provision for the declarations, as those statutes are the only statutes that provide for declarations. Hence, there would be no authority to levy assessments. Furthermore, the declarations are not a contract by which ACI is a party. The parties would be the association and the homeowner, Mr. Reed. ACI would have no rights under that contract or declaration. Similarly, the appellant was not a party to the agreement between ACI and the association, and he's not bound by any agreement between ACI and the association to reimburse ACI or fees they paid to the association. The appellant has already paid all of the amounts the district court ordered for redemption, approximately $24,000, but the sheriff still has not issued the certificate of redemption. With respect to the attorney fees added for the redemption, even if the court determines that the attorney fees were properly added, they must be reasonable, and the court failed to do a lodestar analysis. However, even if the court decides that the fees were could be added, it couldn't just be added to the lien amount. There would have to be another assessment by the board, and the homeowner would be entitled to notice of that amount and that assessment. So the additional $10,743 the court allowed to be added to redeem the appellant's home was improper because they are not taxes and assessments under 582.03, and they exceed one half of the amount authorized under 582.01. So in conclusion, either the 3-year or 6-year statute of limitation would apply to this foreclosure action and would impact the amounts the appellant needed to pay to redeem his home. The foreclosure statutes were not strictly complied with in this case because the lien amount contained improper attorney fees and improper interest amounts. However, if this court rules that the appellant must pay the attorney fees noted in the district court's order, this court should specifically affirm the district court and declare that the payment of the amounts required by the district court were sufficient for the appellant to redeem his home. We ask this court to declare the foreclosure void or in the alternative reverse and remand to the district court. Thank you.
Say, Mr. Wilson, I have one final question. Did you just say that your client has paid the full $24,000 to redeem the property, even though he's disputing roughly half of it?
That's correct. That was the only way he would maintain the redemption rights pursuant to Judge McGill's order. So he had to pay that.
Okay, I just wanted to, that wasn't clear to me from any of the briefing. If that's the case, what's the issue here?
I believe the issue, the sheriff will not issue a certificate of redemption because ACI has yet again filed another affidavit of cost, again, attempting to increase the amounts that are due. So we're waiting for a determination from this court, and it's ironic that they filed that because they are appealing it as well. But that's the status of it currently, Judge.
All right, thank you.
Oh, Judge Riley, you were muted.
Ms. Richardson, are you ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, can everyone hear or nod your head yes or no?
Okay, Thank you, Your Honor. This is Jessica Richardson on behalf of Respondent the Highlands of Edinburgh Sixth Association. The bulk of the issues that are before the court on appeal have to do with the grant of summary judgment on all 13 counts of the plaintiff's complaint. The additional issue with regard to the redemption procedure and amount for redemption that came subsequent to the foreclosure will be addressed by Mr. Weiner. With regard to the underlying issues in terms of the summary judgment motion itself, one thing I do want to point out before I jump into my arguments was the arguments that were just made with regard to strict compliance with Minnesota Statute 580.04, that's an issue that was never presented to the district court. It's a new issue that's currently inappropriately being raised on appeal. The issues that were before the district court, as I said, had to do with the 13-count complaint that challenged the validity of the underlying, primarily challenged the validity of the underlying lien that the respondent association placed on the property in the subsequent foreclosure sale. The issues focus on the lien itself primarily, and the arguments are broken into a few categories, but the first is the issue of the statute of limitations. And I would point out, in addition to the arguments that have been made in the briefing with regard to which statute applies, that regardless of which statute of limitations applies in this case, the declarations and bylaws provide for a continuing lien on assessments and other fees with regard to the property. And as was pointed out, the last missed payment was in the beginning of 2018, and the foreclosure proceedings began also in 2018. So regardless of whether the statute of limitations would be 3 years, 6 years, there is actually a Minnesota Statute 541.03 that pertains to foreclosure of real estate that provides for a 15-year statute of limitation. But regardless, one, the plaintiffs have not established that any of the properly applicable statute of limitations was violated. But regardless of what that would have been, in no case is the statute of limitations less than 1 year. In this case, that was when the foreclosure proceeding began. With regard to a number of counts in the complaint, the issue raised with regard to what it's called lien notice, but argue that the lien notice or lien was invalid because the amount of the lien was incorrect. Count 6 addresses the improper assessments in violation of the declaration. The argument raised, or the issue presented in the complaint, was that the assessments themselves were not proper because they did not conform, or they weren't procedurally didn't conform with the bylaws and the declarations themselves. There's no evidence in the record that supports that that the assessments were not made following a two-thirds vote in either 2008 or 2018. The lack of evidence supports the a determination that summary judgment is appropriate. There was an argument made earlier that only one board member, for example, existed for some years. That misrepresents what was in the record. That is, the association was asked to identify board members, and going back that many years, identified all board members it could. That does not follow that there weren't any others. No additional discovery was conducted, and no additional evidence exists in the record. With regards to counts 3, 4, 5, and 9, these counts have to do with the amount of the lien based on either the interest that was included or attorney's fees. And some of these are a little bit redundant and some overlap a little bit, but primarily those four counts pertain to interest and attorney's fees. The interest amount that was disputed was the issue that was raised was that the interest amount was changed. And again, what the new argument has been raised that this is not in strict compliance with the foreclosure statute. But the issue that was raised in summary judgment was that the interest amount, one, the change was due to the fact that the interest was initially calculated as compound interest. The declarations and bylaws are silent as to how the interest is to be calculated. So when the issue was raised by appellant, the amount was decreased to reflect simple interest as opposed to compound interest. There's some reference in appellant's materials to Minnesota statutes 580.20, 580.21, and 580.28. These statutes don't apply. They are simply, these are limitation periods. 580.20 and 580.21 provide for limitation periods for challenging a foreclosure, and 580.28 provides for a procedure for the right to redeem. So any statutory arguments based on those statutes are inapplicable. The issue of newly raised arguments of strict compliance have to do with Minnesota statute 580.04, which pertains to requisites of notice for the foreclosure, and 580.25, which is a curative act, which validates a foreclosure if certain issues have not been raised. So that really doesn't apply to this situation. The issue that was raised on summary judgment was the fact that the amount of the interest itself changed. We discussed in the briefing Bauer v. Hechtman at 47 Northwest 782, which is an old case, but the court in that case held that an error in claiming more due in a notice doesn't affect the validity of the sale unless it was done fraudulently or resulted in injury. In this case, the change in the amount, meaning the reduction in interest claim, did not result in injury because it was of a benefit to the appellant. So that minor change would not be fatal. There's heavy reliance on the appellant's materials on Ruiz v. First Fiduciary Loan Servicing, but it's completely inapplicable. The Ruiz court was considering or held that a foreclosure is void for failing to strictly comply with Minnesota Statute 580.02 sub 3, which requires assignments of a mortgage to be recorded before a party is entitled to make a foreclosure. That's not an issue in this lawsuit whatsoever. So of the many newly argued statutes on appeal that should not be considered, that 580.02 sub 3 addressed by Ruiz is not one of them. The issue of attorney's fees being included in the lien, again, the summary judgment motion had to do with the original complaint that the lien wasn't valid. And there were attorney's fees dating back throughout the years going up to 2018. Regardless of Minnesota Statute 582.01, which pertains to the fees that can be added in foreclosure, documents, the bylaws and declarations clearly provide for assessments, for additional assessments or charges based on attorney's fees that are incurred in an attempt to collect assessments. So throughout the years, multiple courses of action have been taken unsuccessfully to collect these assessments, and attorney's fees were incurred. Those are properly under the laws and declarations part of the lien that accumulated, the continuing lien that accumulated up through the foreclosure in 2018. There is nothing.
Ms. Richardson, this is Judge Riley. I'm curious how you read 582.01 and 582.03 together.
Well, 582.01 pertaining to the attorney's fees, and I'm sorry, what was the second one? 582.03. I off the top of my head, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. In addition to the interest in the fees that are at issue in the summary judgment motion, in terms of the amount of the lien, there was also an argument asserted with regard to the lack of notice. This is count 11 of the complaint. And I want to make clear that the complaint alleged and at issue in summary judgment was the lack of notice for assessment. This argument has morphed by the time we've reached the Court of Appeals. It appears that there are now being arguments made about the lack of notice of the foreclosure or even of the lien. But the issue at summary judgment was there notice of the assessments that then formed the outstanding debt that became subject of the lien. And in this case, we have ample evidence in the record of notice that was provided through the articles, bylaws, and declarations recorded against the property, correspondence, notice of overdue assessments from property managers, attorney, credit agency throughout the years, as well as constructive notice based on prior conciliation court judgment and a prior lien statement served. There was no other evidence to refute that in the record other than this just false statements that no notice was received, which was not sufficient to defeat summary judgment. The last issue, the last group of claims at issue, count 7, 8, 10, 12, 13, appear to be allegations that the lien notice is invalid because of the association's conduct. Some of these have no basis. There's been no legal basis for claiming that and what's called an illegal board or an illegal foreclosure sale by the board or improper delegation as to an attorney as allowed would somehow result, no legal basis for the argument that those would result in invalidating the lien or, you know, subsequently the foreclosure. Finally, the fraud and the breach of fiduciary duty claims lacked any evidence in the record.
Thank you. Mr. Weiner?
Yes, Your Honor.
I can hear you. I think all of us can, so you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Evan Weiner on behalf of the respondent and cross-appellant ACI Properties, LLC. I would like to focus my argument on the two issues unique to ACI, which are the increased costs that were added to the redemption amount per 582.03, and then also the district court's extension of the redemption period from 6 months all the way to almost 15 months, and and we would argue that that was in error. With regard to the increased costs,
Have they all been paid, Mr. Weiner, as Mr. Wilson argued? Did they pay the $24,000 plus to redeem?
Not prior to the redemption. Prior to the redemption, which is 6 months from the sale.
Yeah, that's your second issue, but I'm just wondering if the full amount, if ACI takes the position now that appellant has paid the full amount to redeem.
Prior to the approximately 15-month redemption period that the district court purported to establish, he did pay the additional increased costs that the district court ordered to the sheriff, is my understanding. However, within the original six-month statutory redemption period, he only paid the redemption price minus the increased costs. In other words, he did not pay the increased costs prior to the expiration of the six-month redemption period. But later on, prior to the extended redemption period, he did pay the increased costs that the district court ordered. Those increased costs were proper, and Judge Riley, you'd asked about the interplay between 582.03 and... I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
I should have asked you that question and not Ms. Richardson.
Yes.
Yeah.
So these attorney's fees of the association are a lien on the property pursuant to the declarations. And under 582.03, a purchaser of a sheriff's certificate may pay other prior or superior liens on the property in order to get clear title, and can include those in the redemption amount as increased costs. So we were paying those pursuant to that provision of 582.03, the provision that allows us to pay off other liens, because this would have remained a lien on the property per the declarations had they not been paid. So we were paying it pursuant to that, and then including that in the amount of increased costs for redemption purposes. And there's no statutory authority to extend the redemption period for an additional almost 9 months. I see that my time is up, so unless Your Honors have any questions.
Judge Smith? Judge Flory?
Nothing further.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Wilson, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. With respect to the lack of evidence regarding the improper board, or that there was no board, we cited to the case law in our brief that at that point we had also requested an extension to conduct additional discovery because some of the answers had just been provided by the respondent prior to that submission. So summary judgment was premature with respect to that count, and the court should have allowed additional time to conduct discovery, just as it allowed the respondent additional time to submit affidavits. With respect to Ms. Richardson's argument concerning that all along it has been the interest amount was incorrect, that's our argument, has been that it was incorrect and that the lien notice has to contain the correct amounts, and that the interest that was calculated and submitted in the lien notice was an incorrect amount of interest.
Well, the lien notice statute requires that it state the amount claimed, not the amount actually due. It seems to me that's a significant difference.
Actually, 580.04, the requisites of the notice, A3 states that it's the amount claimed to be due on the mortgage on the date of the notice. So that's the exact language, is the amount that's claimed to be due on the date of the notice. And our arguments all along has been those incorrect amounts makes that notice not compliant, strictly compliant with that notice. With respect to Bauer, Your Honors, Bauer specifically states that under the facts of that particular case, an error in the stating of the amount of the mortgage would not invalidate the sale unless it appears that it was done with a fraudulent purpose or that it has resulted in an actual injury. And obviously, the appellant has suffered an injury in this case because his property, the foreclosure sale, went forward. And now he's had to pay these additional costs to redeem that property, and he still hasn't obtained the certificate of redemption. With respect to Ruiz, Your Honor, Ruiz doesn't Ruiz stands for the proposition that the foreclosure statutes have to be strictly complied with. Not necessarily that 580.03 was at issue in this case. That's not what we're claiming. 580.02. That's not what we're claiming. We're claiming that that case stands for the Minnesota Supreme Court has held that foreclosure statutes have to be strictly complied with. And that's what Ruiz stands for, Your Honor. With respect to 582.03 and 582.01, no matter how you look at it, 582.03 references 582.01. And 582.03 specifically states reasonable attorney fees incurred after the foreclosure sale not to exceed one half of the amount authorized by 582.01. So that's the specific wording of 582.03. The appellant, the court had posed a question to Mr. Weiner regarding the payment of the redemption costs as ordered by the court. The appellant has complied with the court orders. The dates for redemption were extended, and they were extended prior to those other redemption periods expiring. And so we complied with the court order, and he has paid those sums that were due. And ACI continues to try to increase the amounts that they're claiming, but those amounts have been paid by the appellant. Again, asking the court to declare the foreclosure void or in the alternative reversed and remanded to the district court.
Thank you all. Judge Flory, do you have any more questions for Mr. Wilson?
I do not, thank you.
Judge Smith?
No, I don't, thank you.
I think this worked okay. You were able to hear everyone. I understand there were some technical difficulties getting someone hooked up. Was that right?
Just as you said that, yes, Your Honor. The notice of the oral argument I had says 10:40, and then the call, it says call 15 minutes before. So that's the notice that I have has says that it's at 10:40 today.
Our second oral argument decided to go non-oral, so you got moved up.
Okay.
So, well, thank you all. I hope you have a good day, and we will get our decision out within the 90 days, and I appreciate your appearances. We're going to adjourn now and go consider our non-oral cases.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you. Thank you.